If someone could get the lights for me just a little bit to dim them, I'd appreciate it. What I want to start off with, ladies and gentlemen, is about a four-minute piece of a documentary film that we partnered with the National Park Service to help National Park employees understand the service that they're going about to give. And what the Park Service found out in looking for material and audio to put in their documentary about the environment, about the national parks. All right, so hang on, watch for 4 minutes, and then we'll talk. All the audio, spoken word, in this piece is from the Pacifica Radio Archives.
What is the land thinking? What is Earth thinking? Who's going to speak for Earth? It's going to have to be us. Ever considers itself a land management agency. It is an agency that manages ideas and ideals.
We tell the stories
of American people.
We tell the stories of the tribal people. We tell the stories of all the people.
That's a sample of about a half an hour film about the national parks. And if you heard the spoken word, I know the sound quality was really bad, so it's not in the film. I think it's somewhere between the computer and the sound system. However, if you heard, there's a lot of environmental material, a lot of Sierra Club talking about the national parks, Native Americans speaking on storytelling. And when the national park came to us, they actually were looking for this type of material elsewhere in the world, and they couldn't find it. They couldn't find records and recordings of this type of thing. So that's just to sort of like start the show off by showing the significance of the Pacifica Radio Archives. The cover sheet right there is the one subject that I really want to highlight tonight, and it's the Folio Project. that we've been working on through the National Endowment for the Arts grant. The Folio Project, we set up a system of being able to take the old Folio Station program guides, dating all the way back to 1949, scanning them at high quality, and then doing optical character recognition so that all the text can be word searchable for researchers in the future. Let's get back. All right. So you see I'm editing my own presentation. All right, so these are Folio covers. Again, these are KPFK, KPFA, I believe is in there. And we took 5 to 7 folios and scanned every single page to find out what we could put into optical character recognition, see how successful it was. And then after you do the optical character recognition, then you have to do editing and proofreading of did the system actually translate the picture into the words that we wanted to do. We did find out that it takes a lot more time to proofread the system than what we expected. However, we were successful in scanning these at high quality to where they're 600 DPI, which means that we can blow them up into, turn them into posters, which hopefully would be marketing and promotional tools for the foundation. This is the cover of KPFK, November 11th, 1962, when W.H. Auden and Christopher Isherwood wrote a play for radio called The Ascent of F6, and it was recorded and photographed and recorded at KPFK and broadcast. The good thing about this is where we sort of, even with these first 5 to 7 folios that we've scanned and OCR'd, we're finding so much more information than we expected, and so many more applications for this project that I think is one of the most important things that we've done other than preserving the recordings themselves. So that's the cover with the photographs of W.H. Auden and Christopher Isherwood and cast at KPFK in 1962. In that same folio, we'll look, and where the arrow is, it's the actual day and time of the broadcast and a description of the broadcast. That's really important. Whether the record in the catalog database said it was November 11th, 1962, I don't know, but at least we have the actual folio that tells us. So accuracy in our catalog description is really important. On the right-hand side, you'll see public affairs programming, ballot promotions from the Center, Californians of Mexican Descent, dialogue on existential psychology, invitation of Ralph Richardson, the great Shakespearean actor. Invitation Max Rafferty, don't know who he is, we'll find out someday. Superintendent of Public Instruction. Thank you, come and work with the archives on our project. And once again, in more narrative in the folios, we find managers and essays from famous people about the programming. And here where the arrow is pointing, we talk about the Pacifica Players presents Auden and Isherwood's The Ascent of F6 with Christopher Isherwood in an acting role. We might not have known that had we not had this. So the next cool part about that is that we do have the recording of this radio play in the archive. So as far as the levels go, we have photographs from the cover, we have information, date and time, we have essays about it, and we also have the recording. It's sort of like everything that I would hope for from a folio we actually were able to find in just one of the first folios that we actually did. For research purposes for the future, and when I say the future, I mean 100 years from now, for research purposes, this is absolutely incredibly important. To turn this page into a word searchable document, to where once we have all the data in, we could, researchers in the future or today, tomorrow, can actually put in Isherwood and find where, date and time in our entire 57-year history has this happened. Dreaming about applications about this is really exciting, because I think once we look at this and the word searchable documents there, and these folios do go back to 1949 at KPFA, and we have a really strong collection of most of the folios from all stations that produce them. Once we get this data in, we'll actually be able to trace statistically the development of public radio programming. 1949, it was mostly classical music, a few little bits of public affairs, some arts programming. And as the years go on and we talk more about diversity and we talk about women's collective movement, we talk about the social movements, we'll actually be able to trace program by program in absolute accuracy what happened on the air in Pacifica and how much it contributed to public radio, how much it contributed to public media, and how much it contributed to our society. How much did we contribute, percentage-wise, to the civil rights movement? When we have the data of how many broadcasts of the civil rights movement there were, whether it's lectures, poetry, music, marches, we'll be able to actually brag that the Pacifica Radio Archives is partly responsible for the success of so many social movements, the gay and lesbian movement, the feminist movement, you name them, the Pacifica Radio has worked with them. Here's some other ones. Now here's sort of like the sad tale in it. We know a lot about programming from the folio, but the Pacifica Radio Archives does not have copies of the material. The sad part is that we don't have the sound. The good part is that we have the information. The two circles here are the two programs that we actually have in the archives. Steve Allen's The Meeting of the Minds. It was an award-winning PBS series on television. It actually was developed at KPFK. Very important. And Paul Robeson's Othello. The rest of the programs, Portrait of an American Agitator, Sometimes You Work a Day, Highlander, Folks Learning, we don't have copies of those in the archive. So we're seeing the percentage of what we have in the archive is so low compared to the information that the folio gives us. Right, and we do have the recordings of The Meeting of the Minds from Steve Allen with... I can't remember all about it, but I have talked to Steve Allen's son about it, about being able to use that Media of the Minds for rebroadcast. The one that I know of that I'm familiar with is about the death penalty. And they would have great minds from the past, Shakespeare and Robespierre and two others talking about that subject in sort of a fictitious setup. Very exciting, certainly award-winning, and it was, again, developed at KPFK. Here's another page, optical character recognition. Imagine all of this information to be searchable by word. Two circles, commentary by Marshall Windmuller. This is, again, from 1960. Oh, this is KPFA's folio from 1961, I believe. Mysticism and Morals by Alan Watts is the second circle. The arrows going in are things that I sure damn wish we had, but we don't. Jazz Archives, Phil Elwood. Hip Hamlet. We have, seven Phil Elwood in the archive, not enough. Hip Hamlet talks about Shakespeare, and Rabbi Sidney Axelrod, a commentary from September 26th. Very important things that, you know, again, the archives sound collection does not reflect the history of Pacifica's radio's programming. And the folios will tell us the entire history. This is the storytelling that we really need to know about ourselves. It's what you board members need to know about your history that you're serving. It's what we as researchers need to know about the history of public media to help support and foster what we do. All right, that's sort of it for the visuals. Couple storytelling things. National Federation of Community Broadcasters, the Pacifica Radio Archives, conducted a youth radio conference workshop showing youth how to use archival materials and archives, any archives, not just the Pacifica archives. How do you research to find the information that will support your story, either as a journalist or as an artist? And it was a very exciting 12 youth came in, and we took the Coretta Scott King Ten Commandments Against the Vietnam War that you all heard in Los Angeles. We took those Ten Commandments, played it for the youth, and challenged them to create a two-minute promo. They did incredible. We split them up. Half of them did the technical editing and mixing. Half of them did the writing of the script. It was a really beautiful experience, and we're including that two-minute promo in the From the Vault series at some point when we do a program on Coretta Scott King. From the Vault series. Does everybody know what that is? Yes, From the Vault series. It's now the only history radio program in America. It's being produced weekly from the Pacifica Radio Archives and being distributed to at least four affiliate stations, three in the state of Washington, Vermont, and I think eight other affiliates are working through the process of selecting the program for broadcast. And I think four of the five Pacifica stations are running it on a weekly basis, and the fifth station is running it periodically when they can find the time. The Immigration March. We talked about immigration, certainly as the subject, Spanish language programming. The Pacific Reader Archive staff came together to try to figure out what we could do to support the issue. What can we do as the archive? And what we decided to do was to take the Cesar Chavez speech from 1964 at Harvard University about the success of economic boycott. We went to the UCLA Book Festival and printed 400 copies of the CD and handed them out for free. Yeah, that was really cool. Another story that I found, I met a woman at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters that said she's been downloading off of AudioPort Pacific Radio Archives materials. She's a nurse by profession. She takes the recordings of Alan Watts and Eastern philosophy and goes to the hospital for cancer patients and plays them in the middle of the night when the cancer patients have so much pain that they can't watch the television, which is so horrendous. So it was one of those things that I'd never expected, the kind of use that the Pacific Radio Archives can be applied to. To think of a patient in pain to be able to listen to the R recordings and what Pacifica Radio, what you guys are supporting. Oh, was that me? Some of my art, my early art. Not with 20 minutes. I'm sorry, but actually, you know what, Monroe? I have a CD of From the Vault series, the first one with Lou Hill, so I will give you a copy of that. When I get 2 hours, I'll do it. Another thing about the folios, the very first folio, the oldest folio that we have is in the first 6 months of 1949 for KPFA. The first 6 months, which means that I can now tell you what the oldest surviving recording in public radio media is. Anybody want to take a guess? Nah, you can't guess. You'll never guess. Jaime Diungolo's Indian Tales. Anybody familiar with it?
I was just going to say that.
Jaime Diungolo, he was a famous Native American who did traditional ancient storytelling, and in 1949, for the first time, recorded those stories, and it is surviving in the Pacifica Radio Archives. That's an incredible thing to say, an incredible thing to note from the folio project that we were able to retrieve and collect the folios from KPFA and start our work in discovering, really, archaeology digging, what Pacifica Radio has really meant to our society. And I'm really proud of the Pacifica Radio Archive staff. There's only 7 of us that do all of this work. Thank you. One of the really great things to recently in terms of technology is that we've been trying to figure a way to acquisition currently what is going on in Pacifica. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that we really cannot rely and depend on the programmers to send us materials with all of the records to let us do what we do. So what we did is we tested a computer system with a T1 line. Please don't quote me on technical things, but we have a computer in the archive that is recording 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, KPFK's programming, and we can go back into that computer and cherry pick the programs that are significant that we know that we do want to transfer to master reels and put in the archive. What we want to do next, now that we're sort of working out the kinks of that system, is to duplicate it for the other 4 stations, which is rather an expensive venture. Right now, I'm not even going to say what the number is because we're dealing with phone companies on systems and how to feed things in. And if I told you the number, you'd faint. Well, that's right. You're, okay.
Who decides what gets preserved and what goes down the drain?
Actually, I was going to ask that same question. All right.
I'll answer it. All right. So let's first talk how. Right.
I can't talk like him. And I don't know why you expect me to try.
All right, with all due respect to everybody in the room, ladies and gentlemen, with all due respect, the Pacific Radio Archives was established because the tapes that are on reel-to-reel masters were saved for rebroadcast. Programmers, program directors at the stations, when they had a broadcast that they felt was important or listeners responded, it was saved for rebroadcast. In 1973, the Pacifica Radio Archives was formally established to preserve and maintain those recordings. Currently, since I've been here since 1998, it really has been ad hoc. Whatever the archive staff knows about and can retrieve or contact a producer, we do it. If we get it off the KU, we record it. Marches, national specials. If we go to AudioPort, we can download things from all the stations. We do that now. We do Democracy Now. We do national programming. Criteria for collecting and cherry-picking programming now is some very difficult thing. We don't really have criteria. Other than, one, does Pacifica own it? Did Pacifica produce it? Does Pacifica have the rights to do anything else other than broadcast it? There are plenty of recordings that are independently produced in the Pacifica Radio Archives, and that was done, the producer would pay a fee to the Pacifica Radio Archives to submit their recording for preservation. We don't do that anymore.
Oh, you don't do that.
Brian?
No, that's because we don't work with independents.
Brian? What about the AudioPort? Is the AudioPort content automatically archived?
No.
So the AudioPort's a separate thing?
Really in a fog. Shut up. Shut up. Why don't you make me shut up? No, no, no. Wait, wait, wait.
So I think what Dave was asking was whether or not AudioPort...
I have been asked by the members of this signal area not to call security. So they said they want to deal with him. So I'm letting the local people who asked me to let them deal with him deal with him. And it's simply to our detriment, but it's what I've been asked by the people who are here, by the local directors and the rest.
Okay, Monroe.
All right.
Brian, so...
All right, so now I'm just opening up for questions from the board of directors.
All right, thank you. I would like to ask, so you were saying there's a ton of programming just going up directly on AudioPort. Is there any way to automate... I mean, you've made the point before that what people call archiving on the web isn't really archiving.
Right.
So there's a choice that has to be made. But I assume that with the volume of content that's being put up on AudioPort, that space may fill up at some point. Are there any plans for a systematic approach to transferring that to archive? That's half a question. The other question is, Brewster Kahle might be willing to provide archive.org space, and he says that this is, according to Dr. Lessig, in perpetuity. What are your thoughts on using that? How AudioPort content might make it into the archive?
I don't think that we're working with AudioPort in terms of automating recording. Recording is really the system that we talked about that we've just put in place with KPFK, because that is automated to where it does record without management, everything 24/7, and then we can go back, you know, weeks afterwards, you know, indefinitely to retrieve material for rebroadcast. AudioPort, I don't know that it's set up that way for us to do that, other than, again, looking, reviewing what's on AudioPort, and then selecting for one reason or another to download it. Obviously, one of the main things that we do is provide premiums to the stations for fundraising. That's definitely one of the criteria that we use to say we should download this, create a premium, or put it with a package. If there's a new speech by Chomsky, we match it up with old speeches by Chomsky, call it a package, and we're good to go. And was that both questions?
Close, it's enough of an answer.
Yeah, the archive.org, I really can't comment on it yet.
Sure. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Don?
I think I may have asked you this question before privately, but I don't know. What is the amount of... what is the amount of tapes... Oh, excuse me, I'll use this one. What is the amount of tapes that have been saved but never processed that might be in jeopardy of being lost if they disintegrate before the funds are available to actually digitize them and process them?
I would estimate it 7,000.
7,000 tapes?
Yes.
And my follow-up question is, is it true that some of these 7,000, we don't really know the exact content? So there could be a total treasure, a Paul Robeson interview. Well, of course they are.
We have stories like that every week of discovering things that aren't cataloged. The War and Peace broadcast.
Yeah,
War and Peace. That was not cataloged. Mm-hmm. That was found like on a shelf by me. You know, Coretta Scott King was cataloged, but it wasn't described as a speech 3 weeks after the assassination, which gave the Ten Commandments of the Vietnam War.
Okay, so some of these are in jeopardy of maybe disintegrating. Therefore, one of the objectives of the foundation, if I can be so bold as to say, would be to find the funds, and we're in a difficult time for funds, to find the funds to process those before they're lost, huh?
Right. I'd say we have three off-site storage units that are, you know, full to the gills with tapes. Most of them from WBAI, when they moved their facilities, they sent over 5,000 reel-to-reel tapes to us that didn't have any writing on them. I mean, it could be a blank tape, or it could be like the lost speech of, you know, whoever. I do want to tell you a sad tale that has a good point to it. Martin Luther King's speech on the power of peaceful persuasion. Is anybody familiar with that title? Luckily, we knew that was cataloged. We did have the master recording, and we did transfer it. So there are redundant copies, digital copies available. However, we recently went back to the master recording of Martin Luther King on the power of peaceful persuasion, and the first 5 minutes of the tape have flaked off. It's gone. The master reel recording, the only master of Martin Luther King, the first 5 minutes, the tape has actually flaked off. You can see through it. It's absolutely transparent. There's no sound on it. That tells the story of how many tapes are left that we still have to rescue right now. I know the right now isn't really feasible for the foundation, which is why it's our work in the Pacifica Radio Archives to do outreach to the society that this Pacifica Radio Archives and this radio station and foundation has served for 57 years. Just met yesterday while you were doing the race and nationality training. I apologize for not attending, but I had made a previous appointment with the Ford Foundation, who did give us $25,000 grant to rescue and digitize the protest, rally, demonstration recordings that would not have been selected for any other reason. You know, a 1952 feminist march here in New York City. Not that, you know, our funds will, you know, that's not something that we would rebroadcast. It's not something that we would use as a premium, but it's historically significant. And that's why we went to the Ford Foundation. So I met with them yesterday. Today is Saturday. Yesterday was Friday. Yes. Met with them yesterday, with a positive outcome. And I'll be going tomorrow to WJFF, an affiliate station in near Narrowsburg, New York, to give a lecture multimedia presentation, which is basically what you guys have seen me over do time and again, to support the affiliate station and to support community radio. And what the archive has to say to WJFF audience and their listenership is that when they support WJFF, they can help amass and serve their community. And we have record of it in the Pacifica Radio Archives of how much community radio means to our society.
Brian? Do you have the capacity to take cassettes and convert them into discs? And is that a...
I'm sorry, what?
Convert cassettes into discs. You have equipment that you can do that?
Right, right. We do have the ability to do cassette to digital format. We do have some cassettes of programming that listeners have donated to me, saying, you know, here's, you know, my father's things. He recorded KPFA for the past 50 years. Here's all of his cassettes.
Right.
With writing on it. But, you know, we really haven't even been able to dive into that because we don't know what's duplicate and what is original and what's important and what's not important, what's blank, what's crap. Sorry, pardon me.
Two quick questions. One is it possible to use volunteer effort as listening when you have these piles?
Oh, absolutely. It's called auditioning. And in fact, that's one of the first things I did when I came to the archives in 97 as a temp data entry person, was to audition tape and listen to them and write down the name of the person who it says it is and whatnot. So volunteers, yes, we can do that. In fact, we want to be able to expand that to our website. If we can upload programs and then call for volunteers throughout the network to listen to the material and describe it, that way a cataloger can actually put the material, put the information into our database. Our cataloger, who has not been in the archive since I've been there, the professional master of library and science person that can actually do the processing of not only the description and cataloging at the highest standard of describing what these materials are, but they would also be working on the database, on upgrading how that information is put in and retrieved. It's all about the finding aid. When we talk about the archive, I did hear like the word archive has been so loosely used in the past few days that it just goes up my spine. But I want to be able to distinguish the Pacifica archives from archiving on the websites. And it is in the finding aid. It's about how you describe how many metadata, how much metadata, how many descriptives are about that recording so that people, again, in the future, 100 years from now, can go in and despite the vernacular, despite the language that they use 100 years from now as opposed to now, think about 100 years prior to us and what kind of language they used, how are they going to find Martin Luther King on the power of peaceful persuasion? How are they going to find the name that nobody knows that speaks to the subject that they want to research? Right? I think there's a guy named by Paul Tillich, who's a very famous person who spoke about religion, right? We have a theologian.
Yes.
I didn't know him. I had no reason to know him. They don't teach me that in high school. But we do have Paul Tillich in the archive, an incredible collection. But until somebody comes to the archive to say, I'm looking for Paul Tillich or somebody on religion, we're not going to know. Like already we're looking at the divide between what was known 30 years ago to Paul Tillich and what we know now.
The other question was a fundraising question actually too. Some of these tapes that are most urgently in need, if we had a list of those things that are cataloged that you know of, you know, it would make it easier for all of us to fundraise around it. So if you could provide us with a list in the same way that when I did that fundraising for that equipment, it was knowing what projects you had active that was helpful. So if we all had that and could look at it, we will each of us find situations where we may be able to help raise funds on the basis of that. So that would be helpful. The other question was on this archiving and metadata stuff, do you think there might be a possibility to get a grant from Google and get some help from them since they're right now the leaders in searching data?
I won't say that this was a secret meeting, but I didn't really want to tell anybody about it because I didn't really know what the outcome would be. But I did have the vice president of marketing from Google I won't say a mediator, but somebody who was going to make the introduction, meet with me for a whole day and the archive staff to talk about whether or not Google would want to invest in digitizing the entire archive and putting it on Google. I was skeptical when they came in, and I'm still rather skeptical of whether or not they're doing it for philanthropic reasons or if they're doing it for reasons of money. We're still continuing that conversation, and certainly at some point we'll bring in the right people to do it.
Well,
and then the first question was
actually
about,
before you finish that. So where does that decision get made?
Where does what decision get made?
Whether or not we're going to have Google do that.
Oh, well, I won't make it myself. Certainly, when it gets to the point where they make an offer, then I'll bring it to my management, and then we'll go into the archives committee or the everybody in the entire
room. That would actually be a contract.
Right, it would be a contract. So, you know, it's certainly nothing I can do on my own. I'm not going to do anything secretively. But I didn't want to sort of promise the moon when hadn't even met with the person yet.
Right.
And the other thing was about...
I'm just getting a list of those
things
that are urgent so we can all try and get some funds for it.
I can give you a list of 50,000. I actually want to put the burden on you. Now, I cannot sit in my desk and put out 24 different lists that address each person's individual interests.
Give us 1,000 names and let
us... If you go to the Pacifica Radio Archives website, you can do a database search on the first 100 recordings and they'll be there.
What I mean is, can I do a database search on the first 100 tapes about to turn to goop?
No, because unless we take the time to actually assess each recording, we can't tell you whether it's good or bad or not. In 1994, the Pacifica Radio Archives got a grant from the NEH to transfer 7,000 recordings to new reel-to-reel stock. This was before the digital age. 7,000 recordings were digitized. The stock that it was digitized to help the old tape was worse than the original tape. And that's not just the Pacifica. That was everybody in America. All the archivists and sound preservationists were given this new tape stock that actually had a flaw in its binder. Mm-hmm. So it's those 7,000 tapes, which were paid for by a huge grant, it was something like a $155,000 grant to do this project, those all have to be redone. Some of the masters were sent to the public radio library in College Park, Maryland, because they were duplicates. You know, we got our new fancy reel-to-reel, we set the master to public radio. So what we have, even the new stuff, and those 7,000 are things that, you know, this one's important, that one's important, that one's important. Those are the ones that we actually have to look at. The Martin Luther King, Power of Peaceful Persuasion, the original master on acetate, is in better shape than the reel that I just told you that we lost. That was the one that was actually remastered in 1994. So, yeah, we've, in terms of the lists, I don't think I can take that burden on, because I would want you guys to tell me what you're interested in. I'd be glad to make a list, and then we can go from there. If you listen to From the Vault series, you'll hear subjects that we have material on. FromTheVaultRadio.org, every program, we list all the Pacific Radio Archives materials we used in this half hour. In a half an hour documentary on Iran, we used 5 hours of recordings, 5 different recordings. That's preserving. As we're doing the From the Vault series, we're preserving the reel-to-reel tapes, then using it in the documentary. So we can actually now go for grant money, for preservation money, to support the From the Vault series. We can go get programming grants to support the archive series. Again, the only history radio program in America.
Brian, of those five hours, as the example that you just gave about that, are the 5 hours also available should a producer want to do research?
Right. In fact, yeah. If you go to the From the Vault Radio, FromTheVaultRadio.org, you'll see there'll be a little tag that says you look for the materials that we used in today's program, and then you hit that link, it goes to the Pacifica Archives website where you can actually purchase or, you know, at request
the original
copy of that for production or use.
Wow. Great.
It's really late, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate your time and patience. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.